Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and 4. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Playbook time for a Tuesday on Patriots.com radio. John Rook with you. And it is Nitpick Tuesday. I would assume that we have some things to nitpick about on this day following a 41-34 defeat at the hands of the San Francisco 49ers. I could sit here and I could say, told you so. And I'm actually not going to do that because I did pick the Pats to win last week, although I went against my better judgment. I don't think Eric is going to say the same thing when he comes in here tomorrow. I don't think he'll say, I told you so. I know a lot of people jump on him for being, you know, the negative Nate, but he was right. When we got to the halfway point of the season, said that this team would probably go 7-1. I did not see them getting through this two-week stretch completely unscathed. And even though I kind of got caught up in the euphoria of the big win over Houston, I did think it would be close. It obviously turned out to be close, just not quite the way that I had envisioned it. A lot more points were scored than I thought was possible. Nevertheless, the Patriots lost it. If I'd stayed with my original gut instinct, then I don't think I'd have been quite as disappointed as I was, kind of like you probably were on Sunday night. Fact is that the Patriots lost that game more than San Francisco won it. I don't want to take anything away from San Francisco. I don't think anybody's going to try to take anything away from them, because if you watch the game, then you know that that is a very good football team. It's entirely possible that the Patriots are fortunate to get through the AFC playoffs. It's entirely possible that's the team that'll be waiting for them in the Super Bowl. It's possible. I wrote about that a little bit this week on GoLocalProv.com. I thought that that might have been a legitimate Super Bowl preview, and the matchup kind of lived up to its billing. But the one thing that I keep going back to and over and over and over again is the fact that the Patriots just made way too many mistakes. They just did way too many mistakes to be even thought of as a, you know, potential championship team. You know, when they were down 31-3, I think we were all somewhat shocked by, certainly the value of the score, but nobody around me, and I've got clock operators and official supervisors and spotters and people like that next to me, nobody thought that this wasn't deserved, and nobody thought that the Patriots, you know, were getting hammered or getting screwed. Everybody knew that the Patriots had brought this on themselves, that this was all about New England's problems as opposed to what San Francisco was really doing right. And I think that there's a big difference, and that's one of the things I wanted to kind of get at today. Because while we're quick to praise San Francisco, as well we should, because they have the talent and they have the ability, they have the know-how to take advantage of the opportunities that were presented to them. But as we've always maintained, and it's really magnified in big games, I'm going to say it again right now, mistakes are crucial. Mistakes are absolutely, unequivocally, the great equalizer in all sport. Not just football, but in any sport. You turn the ball over, you give the team a short field, especially in football, you give the team a short field, or fewer plays, or put them in position to do damage to you, they're going to do it. It's almost like, you know, Shark Tank. You know, there's a drop of blood in there, now they start to swarm, and you can kind of like, you can kind of like feel it. And that's what I thought with those early turnovers and those early mistakes. Just goes to show you, no matter who, how good a team you are, and the Patriots are very good. How can you think anything else other than they are very, very good when you're down 31-3 and you come back to tie up the game? Still with about 6.5 minutes to play, and you're tying up the game. They scored 28 points in 11 minutes. That's about what they did. I believe that's what it was. 28 points in about 11 minutes, which is phenomenal when you consider they did that against the number one ranked defense, scoring-wise, certainly, in the NFL. 28 points in 11 minutes. It's kind of like, well, what the hell kept you? What took you so long? Why did it take you so long to figure them out? Well, because game planning and game thinking changes when you're making mistakes out on the field. I don't know what we do about Shane Vereen. I don't know what we do about Stephen Ridley. Other than that's who you kind of have to go with. You notice that late in the game, Danny Woodhead got a heck of a lot more repetition because I'm not sure that either of the other two had enough confidence in their overall ability to hold on to the ball again. I mean, in Vereen's case, he coughed it up once and didn't see the light of day again. And you'll know that, notice that after, technically, after the second fumble by Ridley, even though the first one was overruled, technically after the second one, he did get back into the game. I don't know how you punish these guys. I really don't. But I think one thing is for certain, that if either of these guys or both of these guys are going to be long-term answers, and I don't know how you can say that a guy who rushes for over 1,000 yards for you is not going to be a long-term answer, because that's what Ridley has given you this year. But they're going to have to figure out a way to run with the football in weather conditions such as they are. That's part of it. Now, here's the other, here's the issue that I have almost more so than with Ridley leaving the ball on the ground. I have a little bit more of a problem with Ridley over the last five, six games where he hasn't cracked 100 yards. Now, again, this is a nitpick, okay? This is Nitpick Tuesday. But my biggest nitpick is really beyond the turnovers. The obvious ones are the turnovers and the mistakes that the team made on Sunday night. But if I'm really going to pick nits here, Stephen Ridley isn't running with the ball effectively at all. And he's not getting the opportunities that he was getting earlier. Now, I don't know if this is him. I'd have to take a closer look at the videotape to see if he's just not getting the blocking or if he's not getting the holes or he's not getting the opportunities. I would suggest to you that he might be hitting a bit of a wall here at the end of the year. And again, it's just a suggestion. And until I see differently, I think it's a viable thing to think about and to consider. Part of the reason why you've probably seen Vereen in there a little bit, and you certainly saw a lot of Danny Woodhead. Might be an opportunity for a guy like Bolden to crack the lineup again. Just saying. But that, to me, is a nitpick that stands out. And the fact that, I mean, I know that they had to throw the ball because they were down 31-3, and obviously they threw it somewhat effectively, and Brady threw for well over 400 yards. But 65 passes, 62 passes, whatever it was, that's just redonkulous. Okay. I don't know. You can't beat anybody throwing the ball that much. They almost did. They almost did. But generally speaking, can't beat anybody with that kind of a performance. The mistakes were one. The number of passes thrown were two, and one certainly kind of led to the other. Brady had to throw more. For a couple of reasons. One, you got behind because you're making mistakes. Two, you're making mistakes. You're leaving the ball on the ground. So that's why Brady had to throw more. I get that. And then, of course, you work your way back from the 28-point deficit. As crazy as it seems, it's 31-31. You still got about 6.5 minutes to go. And you give up a 62-yard return to LaMichael James. I mean, really. I realize that LaMichael James is a tremendous talent. He's very fast. He's very good at what he does. And certainly he's going to pop one. He's going to break one on you somewhere, somehow. But you've gotten all that momentum, and you've worked so hard, and then guys that are, you know, out there on the field, I just don't know how that happens. Breakdown? I mean, I was told it was a breakdown. Okay. Well, how does the breakdown happen? I mean, how do those guys not get jacked and pumped for fighting back 31-31 and thinking, all right, we got to make a stop here? And the guy still returned it 62 yards on you. I'm doing whatever I can to get that guy on the ground. And here's the other nitpick. Why is he even running the ball? Ball should have been kicked through the back of the end zone, Steven Gostkowski. What do we have? One touchback this past week? One, I think? See, that's another nitpick. There's no way. When you know that that team is dynamic with some of its return personnel, and I'm speaking specifically about LaMichael James. So when you know that he's got that kind of ability, why the hell is that ball not kicked through the back of the end zone? So I'm going to remove and absolve the blame from the Patriots special teams unit, even though they stunk on that one that you needed them to come up big on, and they stunk. One series, one return, you need them to come up big, and they can't get the job done. But it all started with the kicker who can't kick the ball through the back of the end zone. It's a total and complete breakdown. Those are my thoughts, all right? So I've gotten a couple of my big nitpicks off of my chest, right off the top. How about you? Agree or disagree with the ones that I have already tossed out at you today? Do you have some others that you can share? I'm certain that you do. So here's how you reach us on the program. Email address is webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline. Fire it up and let's go. 508-298-0398. Again, 508-298-0398. Pick up the phone. Let's go. John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name. John.Rook on Facebook, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. A couple of interactions have already come through on Twitter. Frank says, agreed, mistakes, no matter who you are, will cost you. Without those, who knows how the game would go. And then he says, my nitpick is the reoccurring mistakes. Championship teams play mistake-free. Pats need to make that happen. There's no doubt in my mind. Frank's in Schenectady, New York, by the way. Thank you, Frank. That's 110% correct. No matter who you are, mistakes are the great equalizer, and we saw it. Now, I actually think that the Patriots, from top to bottom, as I watched San Francisco play on Sunday night, I believe the Patriots are still, overall, a better team. Now, that doesn't mean San Francisco can't be the better team this year, because I think their upside, and I really hate using the term, but I'm going to use it here, I think their potential is tremendous with Colin Kaepernick at quarterback. Guy can flat out make it happen with his legs, can't he? He really can. And we talked a little about trying to keep him hemmed in and in the pocket. A couple of times they let him get out, and he made the Patriots pay. He made them pay dearly with his legs. Patriots had two huge breakdowns trying to keep him hemmed in. I'm very disappointed in the Patriots defense. That should never have happened. Another nitpick, perhaps. But Kaepernick has got, I think they largely, San Francisco is like one more receiver away. I don't think Randy Moss is the answer. Love, obviously, Michael Crabtree. Davis is great. I mean, I'm just, they're basically a receiver away. That's what I'm looking at. They could find a way to pick up one more reliable, especially short receiver. I think San Francisco could be deadly because their defense is championship caliber. And yet the Patriots still scored 28 points in 11 minutes on that defense. Now, I know that the Smith went down, not Alden Smith. I know that he went down, didn't return to the game. I know that there's been some MRIs done. I haven't heard the latest on whether or not he's done for a while. But I know that he went down at a certain time, and that probably had partly to do with the way that the Patriots were able to move the ball. But I also think that, quite honestly, Tom Brady just got pissed off. I think he just got angry, and I think he just decided, screw it, I'm taking this team on my shoulders, I'm doing it, leave me alone, I'm calling the plays. Kind of that's what happened. Then you start to sense a little momentum, then you start to sense a little energy, a little emotion behind that, defense comes out and makes some stops, and then you get things rolling, and then all of a sudden the special teams lets you down. It should never have gotten to having to tackle LaMichael James. The ball should have been kicked through the back of the stinking end zone. There's just no excuse anymore for anybody to return the ball out of the end zone. You got to find a kicker that can put the ball through the back of the end zone when you have kickoffs at the 35-yard line or whatever the hell it is nowadays. There's just no excuse. No excuse at all. I'll put that right on Gostkowski's leg. Got to kick the ball off the back of the end zone. Set the team up on the 20-yard line. Got to do it. By the way, and as long as I'm nitpicking, our return game stinks. I mean, I realize Devin McCourty, you know, ran one back against the Jets, but the Jets are the Jets, right? Patriots' return game is horrible. How many times did we start 80-plus yards away the other night? Half a dozen or more? Just saying. If you can't get out to your 20-yard line, if you're going to return the ball, you can't get out to your 20, you should lose your job. It's that simple. Lose your job. Got to at least get out of the 20. You can go down on a knee in the end zone, okay, and get the ball out of the 20-yard line. Hell, the college game lets you get it out of the 25 now. So in the college game, there's no way I'd be returning the ball out of the end zone. I got the 25 if I just go down on a knee. And it's almost like that now in the pros. Because if you can't get out to the 20, you should be fired. I don't have any other excuses. There's no other explanation. All right, plenty of nitpicks to go with here. Good start to it. Let's see what Alex in Connecticut has. Alex, you're in the playbook. How you doing today?
Good, John. How are you?
I'm okay.
I say one of my nitpicks is, I mean, this is actually like a nitpick over the last couple of weeks, is drop balls. I've been seeing just a ton of drop balls, especially from Welker and Hernandez, like our two of our biggest targets right now.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, Hernandez did too the other night. I would tell you that, you know, certainly the conditions were not optimum for holding on to the ball because it was slick, but you really can't use that as an excuse.
Yeah. And another one of the biggest things is, I mean, I just don't like, I've never been one of them Patriots fans that's just like, you know what I mean, like whenever the team plays bad, like, don't blame Brady. But, like, I literally just feel like that game, you just literally cannot blame him. Other than the one overthrown ball to Walker, I mean, I really didn't see too many overthrown balls, too many underthrown balls like you have lately. But, like, the whole Super Bowl thing where Giselle said, my husband can't do it all, I feel like that comes in effect. He cannot kick the ball. He cannot, you know what I mean, he can't play defense. Whenever he puts the team on his back and scores 20 points in 11 minutes, I mean, he literally can't do it all. I mean, you just seen on the sidelines on the TV, like, the distraught look in his face. After Michael James had that kick returned, and like next play touchdown, like what else do I got to do? You know,
right.
What I mean? That type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what else I can really add. I think you're on here.
That's all I really wanted to talk to you about, John. I just wanted to also say good job with that tribute thing. The tribute you did at the beginning of the game.
Well, I appreciate that.
TV real good.
Well, it was I appreciate your saying that, Alex. That was a big team effort. You know, the plans were made by Paul Prose and our game staff here, and of course the Patriots marketing department to do the flares for each of the people who perished last week, and then you know, and it's a somber moment, and you have to do what you can to get folks' attention. And then I was told late that national television wanted to carry the entire thing, so I heard from, God, probably a dozen people either on Facebook or texting me or tweeting me or whatever that said, hey, I heard you on TV. And, you know, and I think that's all fine and good, and I'm glad that people took notice of it and paid attention. But, you know, I'm still stunned over what happened. How far away are you from Newtown, Alex?
Actually, about 150 miles.
Okay.
150 miles.
All right, so you're a little bit away. But nevertheless, I mean, it happened in your state. It could have happened anywhere. And, you know, and I know that it's going to be a rough time for a while for a lot of people, and I can't even imagine, cannot even imagine what those parents are going through. And I saw an article earlier today, somebody tweeted out, and I retweeted it, on Japanese gun laws, and I did not know this. But did you know that there were only 11 gun-related deaths in the entire country last year?
Actually, I seen something with, it was Japan, and I want to say there was two more countries with that, too. I seen something just like that. It was Japan, and I want to say maybe, I don't want to say Canada. I know one was definitely over in the UK somewhere.
Well, it's
maybe Russia.
May very well be, but it's because their gun laws are very strict. And for you to own and bear arms, you have to want to prove it and show it that you're adept at doing that. And I think that's the only way that these things cease to exist, is if we make it very, very difficult. And again, I know there's going to be a lot of NRA people and a lot of Second Amendment people. They're going to go nuts on me here. Believe me, I'm as conservative as they come, all right? I'm very much considered, I consider myself a conservative, although I consider myself a social moderate. But I would tell you that this kind of stuff is still going to happen. And I don't mean to opine about this, because I'm sure, you know, you have your thing, and this is a sports show, and I understand that, but we haven't been on the air since the incident happened. And I would tell you that this is the time for bold moves, and that these 20 children, little kids who will never get the chance to grow up, to go to school, to drive a car, to go to college, they'll never get the chance now. These 20 children should not die in vain. They should not die in vain, but they will unless people like you and me and others talk about it and stand up and tell our legislators, get off your ass and get something done about this now.
Yeah. And it's sad that this is what had to happen for this to finally be brought to justice, you know what I mean?
It's sickening. Yeah, Alex, it's sickening. The whole thing is sickening. It was kind of like, it reminded me a lot of 9/11, when I couldn't turn my head from the television for like 40 hours straight, because I couldn't believe what I was watching in front of my eyes. And last week, the same thing almost happened, and it got to a point where I said, all right, I can't do this anymore. And I've kind of turned off the television since. I have not watched any of the news reports. I know that they're having funerals, yesterday and today, and will continue to have them probably throughout the week. And I know that the sports world has kind of rallied around it a bit. Obviously, we had a thing on Sunday night, and the UConn basketball team did something last night. And I know that Providence basketball is going to do something tonight in Providence for their next game. So I'm just saying that, you know, it's great that we're recognizing them, but please, can we do something more? Can we take this to a different level? Can we do something that will mean something to where these parents, God bless their souls and the souls of their children, but can we do something for these innocent parents to where when they have to remember 20, 30, 40 years from down the line, they can also remember that, well, it's unfortunate, but look what good came out of it, that we changed our gun laws for the better in this country. That's what I want to see happen here and now. Because if we don't do this, then everybody in Congress should be fired and shown the door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I mean, everybody should resign immediately and walk out. And there's a reason, I think, why the NRA, by the way, has been silent. Silent since Friday. Silent. Not a word, not a response, not nothing. And that's as of this morning when I was looking for comments and didn't see any. There's a big reason behind it, because they know they're wrong. And there's nothing they can say or do that will change anything. So it's better that they just keep their mouths shut. And I totally believe in the right to carry arms. Okay? To own and care. I believe in that right. It's a constitutional right. I believe that. I'm not saying give it up, but I'm saying that assault weapons got to go. And I think, you know, from here on out, you got to make it very difficult for people to get guns. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Just by far, other than, like, classifying, like, school shooting, just by far, other than 9/11, the one of the worst things you've seen?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, to me, this particular tragedy, I don't mean to make light of Columbine or anything else that's happened, because they were all horrid, horrid examples of the human race at its very worst.
Just has an effect. They were just little kids.
Exactly the point. I was more affected by this because of the innocence of the six-year-olds that died.
The Columbine people could actually defend themselves somewhat, you know what I mean? Like little kids, they don't understand. They're just...
No. How about the story? How about the story today, Alex, that I heard on one of the newscasts that I actually had to, you know, I think it was the Today Show this morning. The story of one of the kids who was huddled in the closet of the survivors. And this just goes right to the innocence of these children who were butchered. But he said, let me go out there and take care of him. I know karate. I mean, it makes you laugh and cry all at the same time. But that just goes right to the innocence of what transpired. And, you know, I'm damn near ready to burst out crying right now. And I didn't mean to do this today. I'm glad, you know, when your call popped up and I saw Connecticut by your name, that's the first thing that I thought of. And I think that'll probably be the first thing that a lot of people think of when they see, you know, Connecticut or see the initial CT or whatever, you know, for a while because of what happened. Kind of like what happened with Columbine, you know? Yeah. And certainly when you think New York or you see FDNY or you see, you know, PDNY or you see 911, those three digits together, what do you think of? So I hope that we can make this mean something, but it needs to start here. And everyone that's within earshot of me right now, whether you're listening to this live or you're listening to this on the podcast later, please do more. And I hope that you'll say a prayer, if you haven't already, for the affected parties here. But please do more than that. Please type out a note. It'll take you 2 minutes to send an email to your congressman or your senator. And just say, do something about guns, please. And then if we can do that, maybe somehow it gets done.
Yeah. I think the saddest story I heard, if you didn't hear it yet, to add on is... by the little boy who pulled his notebook out and wrote the note to his mom saying how sorry he was for being a bad son that day.
Oh, God.
And all that. And it was like a ripped up little piece of torn paper. You have to Google it and read it. It's hard to make out, but you can make out most of it. And then I guess like when they gave it to the mom, she just like was so distraught about it.
I'm sure. That would destroy me. If I were a parent getting that, that would destroy me. I appreciate it. Alex, thanks so much for the call. I'm sorry to turn the football into this, but I'm also glad that we had a chance to at least get it out there, and we'll try to do better from here on out. How's that?
All right, John. Take care.
Thanks for the phone call, Alex. All right. Good stuff by Alex. I appreciate him, and I appreciate you letting me opine here for a couple of moments. I really did not intend to do this today, but I'm just so visibly moved and emotionally moved by what transpired and what has transpired over the course of the last few days. And you know, I was glad to have played a small part in trying to, you know, do something about the tribute to this on Sunday night. But I just hope that you and I and anybody else, I hope, and especially little kids, I hope we never have to see this again, ever, ever. All right, back to the phones. Here we go. Melvin in Tennessee. Melvin, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, Melvin. What's up, man?
Ooh, that threw me off guard a little bit, shocked me. I agree, Cole Harley, with what you said, but that threw me off guard. I almost forgot my point now.
Well, I apologize for that, and I realize that's probably tough to follow, so I'll hang with you here for a moment.
Yeah, no problem. But, I was getting to the game.
Yes.
One of the nitpicks that I had was I just feel like sometimes that it's not only the defensive backs, but the defensive play calling, too, contributes to putting Dennard. Of course, the moss touchdown seemingly looked like it was him, but, you know, I can live with that.
Yep.
You know, he's a rookie, learning his role. He did well against Andre Johnson last week, so getting beat by Moss.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that, you know, you can adjust to it and figure it out, but it seems like we continue to heat. The second touchdown, he was seemingly guarding two people, and I don't understand why. It seemed like they wanted to go to the scene, and I don't understand why that they didn't just, or maybe I'll be happier next year once maybe one of those coaches and one of the other coaches is possibly getting fired. Maybe Belichick can bring one of them in, because I think that not only is it the defensive players, which I'm not going to get on Erickson can rather play great or just completely he's nothing. Mm-hmm. He's never in between.
Yeah.
It's really, he played very well for the last couple of weeks, and then he just goes back to doing, I think, just nothing. He just wasted a person out there. So I just feel like, I just wish they could rather, or just help him out eventually just with some better play calling. And then, you know, on the third down, then they run a zero. I mean, they, you know, a cover zero and all that blitz. And I just don't – I think that, you know, last week we did a little bit with Mayo or – well, I haven't seen Sparks do it. Maybe switch it up. Maybe have Sparks come in and do a little blitzing. But I wouldn't just run a cover zero with that. I just think that the play calling, the well at times, leaves them out to dry. I know Dan was guarding two people on that – on that second touchdown. So,
okay.
You know, I just think that if they can improve that, that'll go along too. Like, you know, go along with it. It's where I think it's not only the players, but sometimes it's what they call.
Right.
So, and maybe the, maybe it's Belichick, maybe it's his design, but I think that they could have called a little bit something.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what I was disappointed in. I was disappointed that we didn't really have what I thought, you know, should have probably happened was someone to kind of spy on Kaepernick a little bit. I thought I saw it early in the game and then I got away from it. And then clearly when he got open and was able to turn, you know, chicken salad from chicken feathers on a couple of plays. And there was one long run that I remember in particular. I'm like thinking, where the hell are the linebackers? And they were all committed elsewhere. So I thought that they missed the boat a little bit on the defensive game plan. And I also have to give a lot of credit to the San Francisco game plan, which was to run right at the Patriots and not give them an opportunity. Plus, they also went over the top a couple of times, and I thought those were probably well-placed strikes. But I thought San Francisco's game plan was pretty solid overall.
Right. I mean, you know, going deep on the Patriots, I mean, it's not rocket science. I would try to. If they're not stopping it, then, you know, I could. I just don't normally after the Marlins, I was like, okay, they got beat the overtime. They're going to adjust. Then two or three more touchdowns came with scenes. I was like, what's wrong with this game plan? And you're thinking, I went to the Tennessee game with Locker, with playing Russell Wilson later, with quarterbacks like that. They've gotten away with some easy runs that I would think somebody would have been spying him, Ninkovich, or somebody would have contributed more towards making sure he doesn't get open in that pocket. And they had a good one. I think that Francis made a good play with. It was a third down and long. And I knew they were going to try a little dump off or something like that. They tried a little dump off, and Francis kind of faked the rush in. And then as soon as when Frank Gore tried to sneak out, he kind of went right there behind him and made a great play. I was like, I'm just concerned that where is this throughout the game plan. You know, I think that they're getting outsmarted sometimes with the defensive calls that they do. And I've seen Locker break free some. I know some of them are great players. You can't stop everything, but I would rather him beat one of our players, but seemingly it's third down 11 and he breaks, oh, there's nobody there.
Yeah.
It's wide open. Just, I mean, no apartment to see. Right there, and I don't know, man. I think that they're getting out smarted at times. So,
well, I would say that what the part of that is maybe teams have figured out a few things, and the Patriots are just slower to adjust. And I don't know, it's so much being outsmarted as maybe they're unwilling to adjust because they don't feel the need to do that. They don't want to adjust just for adjusting's sake. I think we saw that earlier in the season, when the Patriots defense didn't seem to adjust to the, especially the defensive backs, playing softer on receivers. And then they finally decided, well, maybe we had to. And then, of course, they definitely had to when they got, you know, Tlaib in the fold. So I think that they're just reluctant to stray too far from the course that they originally set. And to me, that's one major criticism, I think, overall, the coaching staff is that I think, you know, quite frankly, they, you know, and I don't know if this is a criticism, if this is a proper criticism or not, but I would tell you that I think they are slow to counteract. That's all I'm going to say. I think they're slow because I think they, first of all, I think they have the courage of their convictions. I do believe that they believe that their way is the right way. What I want to see, though, this isn't about being right. This is about winning the damn football game. And so if someone is whipping your butt, you need to be able to stand up and say, all right, I'm getting my butt whipped. Let's change this thing. That's what I want to see. And I really believe that arrogance plays a factor here. And I want to see these guys stand up, and I want to see them make a change. Not, you know, all right, let's let it work a little while longer before we change, and then let's let something else bad happen. You know what I'm saying?
And it's the stubbornness coming into play.
Yes, yes. And to me, that's a fundamental problem, I think, from within the staff and from within, you know, the entire organization. I just believe they're stubborn. And they, I don't care whether or not, you know, I really don't care. All I care about is winning. I don't care how you get there. Just win the game.
Right. So, I think, I don't know, like, it's whether you do really well. It's never in between. That's what makes it so wishy-washy with New England. I love them the best, but it's just, it's an all-or-nothing affair.
Yeah.
It's superb against the Texans. And I'm not... And then did nothing.
Listen, brother, I am right there with you on that one. For to turn out that kind of a performance against Houston, and then to come out that flat and that, you know, mistake prone against San Francisco, I don't get it either. And I think a couple of things. Number one, the fact that you're playing two teams of that caliber back to back. Number two, because you won the first game so easily. That I think it can lull you into a false sense of security, and I do believe that's the case. Even they may tell you that that's not a problem, but quite honestly, I don't buy it because I think human nature just kind of sets in. And I knew that was going to be a problem. I was just hoping it wouldn't be a big problem, and it turned out to be a big problem. Now, that having been said, I think this week, Melvin, Jacksonville had better have their cleats on. That's all I'm going to say.
I'll be quiet. But as far as what else did I ask? I wouldn't say that it's completely bad that we lost, because could you imagine this team's confidence if without Gronkowski they went in there? I mean, they've beaten the Texans and beaten the 49ers. So yeah. It's kind of a good loss.
Yeah.
Everybody's so sold on, oh, we're going to play bad. We're going to have to play. We're number three now. It's not that we didn't just conclude the 16 weeks. Denver has one slip-up, or even if the Texans lose this week, and then, I mean, you never really know. I mean, the two most games I probably went to sleep on was the Arizona Cardinals and Seahawks. I mean, saw what happened with that. I didn't think that those types of teams really stood a chance. But so you never really know in these last couple weeks. It's kind of good. We kind of got shook up. I don't want them to get too confident like they did in 2010.
Yeah.
I mean, y'all know what happened with them winning the first round
yeah.
and got smacked. So... we're too young of a team to be like that, so I want them to kind of come back down to reality, fix a couple of things, and hopefully we can still get that number two seed. But if we got to, you know, if we got to face number three, then I mean, I want to buy for health, not really
right.
because of a lack of confidence.
Right, that's true, and they are going to get healthier, and there is still 2 weeks to play. I certainly like Denver's schedule more than I like the Patriots' schedule, but at the same time, you know, you're right, because if they realize that there's nothing else they can play for, you never know. Yeah, you just never know, and I wouldn't count on it. And I don't think that the Patriots' season is over. And thanks for the phone call, Melvin, but I don't think the Patriots' season is over if they have to play, you know, in the wild card weekend. I do not think that at all. If anything, let's put it to the test about gaining some momentum, right, and getting on a roll, and then not, you know, having to take the week off where you stop the momentum, which has been a big criticism of the bye week. You'll have a chance to set that wrong. Eldridge in North Carolina, you're next in the playbook. Hi, Eldridge.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Okay, buddy, what's up?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
I applaud what you said about the gun laws. I'm with you 100%. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They should be a whole lot stricter, but come after them, man. You got to go after the guys that's also that's selling the guns illegally to them. And I don't think they're hard on them that much either.
No, you're probably right. You're probably right.
But the problem I have with that is I got a FBI clearance for no driving the truck for hazardous material.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get a gun. I don't have no bad or criminal records or nothing like that. But I can't get a gun.
Wow.
No. Everybody else can get one.
And you got clearance. How about that? Yeah, there's something wrong with that, brother.
There sure is. I've been driving about 6 years now. So, but getting back to football.
Yeah.
I want to shoot something by you, John. You know, like I was telling earlier, it's not Brady. It's a supporting cast. And that receiving core, minus Lloyd, it's the same receiving core we had when we was in the Super Bowl with the Giants, which defense was similar to San Francisco, but San Francisco is better because they're more physical and they can run and everything. And they did the same thing the Giants did. They stopped his two main targets, Welcher and Hernandez, They got Ananda shipped up, if you ask me. He got shipped up. And he's like, he don't want to catch no more. But, you know, I just don't understand why they can't just go after bigger, stronger receivers. I know, you know, you can't do it now, but I just can't see why they don't target that. When every year, it's the same thing.
Well,
it's the same thing with aggressive defense. Same thing.
I think that they've tried to do that with, you know, the bulking up of the tight end position, and obviously your best tight end and arguably the best tight end in the entire league is still out with an injury. So I think that's part of it. As far as the wide receivers are concerned, I'm assuming that A, if there are guys out that they wanted to get, they're not available. B, that they also just seem like the ones that they have feel like can do the job. And I don't know if we just think that this is nothing more than a misclassification of personnel or what.
But I think it's poor personnel assignment, you know, poor, judging character. Because I mean, when we went to the Super Bowl in 2008, you know, we had best receivers, no good tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when we're back the following year, I mean, 2008, we had good tight ends, but no good receivers. And then now you got a little running game. You got some good tight ends right now. But like I said, when the main one's gone, every defense that knows that's a defensive-minded coach will shut down the middle of the field where we like to throw it at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we ain't got nobody on the outside that can stretch and make you back up. You know, and that's one that I've been saying for 4 years. But everybody keeps saying, no, you're wrong. We do the Patriots way. But to me, the Patriots way is, you know, it's getting a little bit better, but it ain't getting good enough to win one.
Right.
You know, and on the other side, the defensive side, somewhere down the line, you got to quit getting them second, third, fourth round picks and go after the main guy that you need on corners.
Right.
And safeties. You know, get these value picks. Only time the value meal count is when you're at McDonald's. You don't count nowhere else.
Can I use that one, Eldridge? That's a good line.
Yes, sir. You can use that, sir.
Okay.
You know, and I'm like, Arrington, I wasn't sold to Arrington when he left Tampa Bay. Or Arizona and coming to us wasn't because he's just like Wheatley.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't fast enough, he ain't aggressive enough, and he get beat long. You know.
Well, yeah. He got turned around on that play by Crabtree. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing a hook pattern, and you can't stop a hook. I mean, I know you're gonna get man a little more, and but early show thought that Crabtree is just a possession receiver. He's strong. He can breast run.
Oh, there's no question about that. He's way more than just a possession receiver.
Yeah, but see, he was
a game breaker in college.
He sure was, because I watched him.
Yeah.
You know, and then like I told you, I don't know why you want to keep three linebackers in when they got those fast receivers and Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And then you play in quarters. And when they run them seam routes, that's why the other caller, you can understand why Darn it was on two guys.
Yeah.
Well, with no safety help. They expect the linebacker to drop back deep, but he didn't drop back deep enough.
Yep.
You know, he didn't help him out.
Right.
So, and I just don't understand that, you know. And you're going to put a rookie on Moss. I don't care if Moss is 40. He ain't going to outrun Moss.
That's probably true. Well, that's true. It obviously happened on the touchdown, too. So.
Sure did. You know, I just don't understand. And when Dennard got hurt, I just can't understand why they didn't move McCourty back to the other corner. Put Tlaib on one side, him on the other, and put Chong in there. Because Chong is healthy, if I ain't mistaken, right?
I actually think that would have been a better suggestion, Eldridge. I would agree with you.
Would have been a whole lot better.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Because McCourty, he's doing pretty good at safety, but he ain't doing good enough. Because, he gets there late, and Gregory, Lord knows, I wish the man.
Right.
I'd rather took my lumps with Wilson than with Gregory.
Right.
Because he's getting beat left and right. I mean, that's the scene pass in the middle between him and McCourty.
Right.
Like, neither one of them could have got there. At least one took out the receiver and doesn't try for the ball. At least that.
Right. Okay.
You know, but I just can't see that.
Right.
And like my man said, Brady can't do it all, you know. Can't do it all. He brought us back. Then they give up those two quick touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
That touchdown and that long run, you know, like, darn. But then again, like I said, Deion then reminded me of last year's Super Bowl. When Brady counted on him, they let him down.
Yeah.
And Deion should have caught that touchdown pass at the end zone with Brown behind him. He wasn't on him. He was behind him, and he dropped it again. And I'm like, I don't know why you keep bringing him back and why they keep – to me, I think they faked the injury report with Stallworth. I don't care what anybody say. Because I saw the game last weekend. He played the whole game. Everybody can say, no, he didn't. Yes, he did. I got it recorded. And everything else, he's in the game, the whole game. And in the game, he's hollering, jumping up, down. Praise him that he got a 63-yard touchdown. Next week, I know he's on the IR, and they got Branch back. And that, to me, is a mistake. That's the one we could add that could stretch the defense a little bit. At least make them back up some.
Okay.
And Lloyd can't do that.
Right. Okay.
That's all I got to say.
All right. Eldridge, it's good stuff as always, brother.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Let's get to Don in Georgia. Don, thanks for hanging on. You're in the playbook.
Hey, John. How are you today?
I'm okay, Don. Thanks for calling.
All right. As far as the nitpick goes, I want to talk. I don't think people are really watching McCourty. His timing has been really good. Look at those last two interceptions. So my nitpick is on the people who are saying that he's not making it. My real reason for calling was your rant concerning guns. What laws would you try to implement to take care of this?
Got to do something about assault weapons. There's no need to have, something that can shoot 30 times in a second.
I believe that assault weapons are already banned without special permit.
Well, then you got to do something to keep them off the streets, because they're still on the streets, and you can still go get them.
This guy didn't have assault weapons. He had a rifle and a pistol, and okay. He stole them. They weren't even legally his.
They were his mother's.
That's right. Then the thing is that these problems seldom ever come up with people who legally have guns. The truth is in a lot of these places, that theater a few months ago, was it West Virginia? I forget what college. That there were people who had permits to carry that weren't allowed to have their guns where they went.
Yeah.
And they could have ended the situations with a lot less bloodshed and innocent lives lost.
I think I know where you're going, and I don't disagree with anything that you're saying, but the problem here is that there's too many of these things on the streets already. And so you've got to figure out a way to stop it somewhere. And the only way that you can actually make a dent in it is by making it almost impossible to get it. And first of all, the ones that shouldn't be on the streets need to get off the streets. So I don't know how we go about doing that, because I'm not privy to a lot of the information, a lot of the laws that are out there. But I would tell you that there has to be something. Somebody has to stand up and say this needs to change.
I would like to agree with you on it, that the ones that are out there illegally, the ones that shouldn't be on the streets, we need to get rid of. The problem is they don't obey the laws. The only way to make a big difference is to crack down with very stern sentences. I know everybody thinks it's inhumane to have hard labor, but you know what? When the guys were forced to do hard labor, they didn't come back to jail.
Yeah. You're probably right. You're probably right. I would hate to take that little bit of liberty away from people, but you know what? It doesn't matter. When you take it upon yourself to commit heinous crimes, you give up all rights. You give up every right, as far as I'm concerned, that you were born with.
I agree. And that's why we need to stop ACLU and other groups that think that prisoners should have all these privileges. I know a man who got a law degree while in prison for life from BU when I couldn't afford to go to Massasoit.
Okay. Well, that there is something wrong with that. I don't disagree. I don't disagree. There is something wrong with that.
And that's where the corrections need to be made. It's not in hampering law-abiding citizens. It's punishment for those who break the law. Things will change if we have serious punishment.
Well, I think that would be a step in the right direction. So we need to make sure that, you know, whatever feelings that you have about that, you get it to the proper people.
Yes, sir. All right. I love the show, by the way.
Don, thank you so much for taking the time to call. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
You got it. All right. That's Don in Georgia. Time for you at 508-298-0398. Again, the ACE ticket hotline, 508-298-0398. Let me get a couple of emails in here. This one comes from John in Alaska, who says, John, just wanted to say that the game against the 49ers was a tough one to watch. For a bit there, I thought the Jets had secretly knocked out the entire team and taken their places. I mean, they dropped more passes than Sanchez has run into teammates. But then for one quarter, the real Pats came out to give us all false hope, only to again get replaced by the Jets. Seriously, though, I went into the game fearing we wouldn't win it. I still think our chances are good. The team has shown many positives throughout the season. I mean, the defense is better than last year, so they should be able to go all the way. Great job with the game. Thanks for your insight. You know, John, I actually think that's, you know, that's the way that a lot of Patriots fans should feel right now. Yeah, sure, nobody likes to lose. Losing stinks. But it's not the end of the world because they lost. I mean, let's face it. Again, as I opened up the show at the top of the last hour here, I did say that, you know, I believe it was midseason, I said, you know, they're going to go 7-1 over the last 8. I didn't think they could get through the Houston-San Francisco stretch undefeated. Guess what? They didn't. I wished I had been wrong, but I wasn't. And I wonder if the Patriots weren't maybe lulled into just a slight bit of false sense of security with that big win over Houston. I think human nature being what it is, and of course they're going to deny it. Oh, we focus on one game at a time, one team at a time. You know, whatever happened against Houston, that was left behind. We didn't have any center, we didn't have any anything like that going into the San Francisco game. And I'm going to say, bull. Again, it's human nature to feel good about yourself when you put a licking on a really good team. You have to watch out for that, and you have to keep in mind that I think veteran teams are better able to handle this type of situation. And this is not the veteran team, as I've said several times throughout the course of this year, this is not the veteran team it once was. Certainly not the veteran team it was, say, 2 years ago. It's just not. This is a younger team. There's less veteran influence and presence. And so what you're seeing this team go through, mistakes that they have made that you're not used to seeing, you must keep in mind that the players that are making these mistakes are players that haven't been here longer than maybe a year or two, for the most part. And so they've got to learn just like the other guys, just like their predecessors before them need to learn. And so what happened on Sunday is a part of a learning process. And now perhaps that they've gone through it and they rallied back and they came very close, but they still couldn't get over the hump. Maybe now they realize, all right, how serious they've got to be from the kickoff. And they need to make sure that they take great pains and great care in every instance when you're making a run or you're making a rally to realize the situation. That special team should have gone out there when it was tied at 31, realizing, okay, we don't want them to get good field position here, so let's knock the ball through the back of the end zone. Instead of letting Michael James go for 62 yards on a kick return, and then one play later, boom, Michael Crabtree's in the end zone, and you're down 7 again. I mean, how deflating was that? When that happened, I knew the ball game was over. There's still 5 minutes and change left on the clock. I knew the game was over. There was no way the Patriots were coming back. That, talk about letting the air out of a balloon. Gone. You've got to take great pains to consider each and every situation as it comes up on the field. Veteran teams do this. Experienced teams do this. This was a chance that got away from a less experienced team. Maybe they learned something from it. And time will tell us whether or not they did. All right, let's get a timeout in here, and then we're going to continue with you. Phone lines are open and available. It is 508-298-0398 on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Email webradio@patriots.com. Nitpick Tuesday here in the Playbook.
Ah, that is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of the smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price of participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the Red Zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Contractors, having trouble getting a construction bond? Did you miss the chance to bid a job because your agent didn't support you? Give me a call. My name is Brent Cross. I want to be your bond agent. Call 800-999-7345. That's 800-999-7345. Online at crossagency.com. Cross Insurance is one of New England's largest providers of construction bonds. Don't miss out on any more work. Cross Insurance, the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is your Bridgestone Tire headquarters in New England. We have thousands of quality Bridgestone tires in stock at great prices. Save big on such tires as the Bridgestone Dueler HL Alenza, Taranza EL400, the Dueler HT and AT, and the Potenza G019 Grid. And if you're looking for a quality tire to get you through the winter, we have Bridgestone Blizzak tires in stock right now. We have Bridgestone tires in stock no matter what you drive. Remember that we are New England's headquarters for top flight maintenance, with over 100 ASE-certified master technicians on our staff, utilizing state-of-the-art diagnostic equipment. Plus, you'll find easy online appointments, comfortable waiting areas with free Wi-Fi, free shuttle service, over 65 locations across New England, and the best customer service in the industry. Check out our everyday low prices now on Bridgestone Tires and make your appointment today at SullivanTire.com. We're always here to get you there.
Welcome to Dunkin' Donuts.
I need some of Dunkin's delicious packaged coffee.
Sure, how many do you need?
One for everybody on my holiday shopping list.
Wow, so that's why you brought a wheelbarrow.
Give the gift everyone loves to get. Delicious Dunkin' Donuts packaged coffee. Get 2 pounds for just $12.99. Available only at Dunkin' restaurants. America runs on Dunkin'. plus applicable taxes. Single pound sold at regular price. Offer excludes 8-ounce packages. Participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
Hour number two inside the playbook for a Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots.com Radio. Gabe sends this on Twitter. Do you think the Patriots have faith in Ridley or Vereen as much as Woodhead? I think it's a different sort of faith. And I think when the other guys before you, who are better every down backs than Danny Woodhead, when you leave the ball on the carpet, as they did on Sunday night, then I think, you know, it's kind of like next up. And Danny Woodhead is the next up. He's not an every down back. He just doesn't have the overall strength and the ability to work in situations where you're going to find yourself restricted. He's better in space because he can create and he can cut and he can move back and forth a bit. But, you know, when Ridley and Vereen are leaving the ball on the turf, next, somebody get in there that can do the damn job. So that's why you saw him in there, and he actually came through in pretty good fashion. He had as good a game as just about anybody, I think, overall on Sunday night. But he's just not an every down back because of his limitations, which should be fairly obvious to see. And again, I'm not trying to denigrate him. I'm just saying that that's just kind of the way it is. Jefferson in Salt Lake City, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how are you doing?
Good, Jefferson.
Good, good. Hey, yeah, I wanted to respond on your take on Stephen Gostkowski on how he should have just kicked the ball back in the end zone. I agree with you 100%, but you can't lay the whole game on him for that. I mean, we buried ourselves long before he kicked that kick. I mean, that was inches from being one of the most legendary comebacks in the history of the NFL.
Agreed. I totally agree with you. And I don't mean to lay the whole thing on him. It kind of sounded like I was. But all I'm saying is that you got to know the situation. And I know that it was wet, and I know the conditions were not exactly conducive, perhaps, to booming the ball. But if you ever get one off, you got to figure out a way to get one off. And it's got to happen then.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that. I can't tell you how disheartening that was. I mean, I don't know how much adrenaline was running through your body when we tied the game up at 31-31, but it felt like somebody kicked me right in the breadbasket when they scored that touchdown.
It did.
With, you know, in three plays. I mean, what? Just a. I mean, I don't even know how to respond to it.
You're absolutely right. 110% right. That it, and you know what it had to have done to the players on the field. So it doesn't surprise me that San Francisco directly went for the jugular. And you got to give Kaepernick and Crabtree credit. They made the play they had to make. I totally would have done the same thing.
Absolutely. And I got to say, you know, I mean, I called in last week and predicted a 47-17 blowout, which clearly wasn't even close, but no, I did not expect Kaepernick to play with that much poise in that type of environment. I mean, granted, he put the ball on the ground, well, like four times. He lost it on downs one time,
yeah.
I think it was. But you know, I mean, for the most part, he did a solid job. He didn't look like he was rattled at all. I mean, it was not night and day watching him play versus Matt Schaub, you know, the week before.
Right.
It was impressive, you know. And I mean, I'm an Alex Smith boy. I love that guy, but I was very impressed with Kaepernick and just the overall performance that he gave. What do you think it says about our chances? I mean, granted, we're not going to see the Niners again unless we get to the Super Bowl. You know, I mean, it's the only opportunity we'll ever see him again this year. But knowing that we're probably looking at a divisional playoff game at Denver if we retain the third seed, which I expect we will, what do you think our chances are looking like now that we're looking at three playoff games versus two?
Well, I'll be honest, I think there's still a little football to be played here, so it's probably a little premature to completely go into that. But I, you know, as long as you ask the question, I don't fear going to Denver. I realize that when we were talking about this, I think maybe a couple of weeks ago, and we're talking about teams that you would least like to face in the playoff, and I chose Denver at the time. And realize now that, again, that I had to make a choice of the existing teams. If I really wanted to make a choice, I think I would have chosen the Giants or the San Francisco 49ers, but they're in the other conference. As far as the AFC is concerned, look, everybody would love to have the game at home. If you got to go to Denver, you got to go to Denver. And I think the Patriots certainly are capable of beating Denver, whether it's here or whether it's there. But you're trying to look for the optimum situation. So I don't think it's a death knell. I certainly think that if the Patriots have an opportunity to, let's say, just for practical purposes here, let's say it is Cincinnati in here as the sixth seed. And so you open up on wild card weekend with a game against the Cincinnati Bengals. Hopefully you take care of your business. You get a little momentum and you're rolling through while Denver's sitting at home. Then you try to, you know, utilize that, take that to your advantage and see if you can't, you know, create a little bit of, create a little bit of momentum. I mean, you're going on the road, so you want to take that big crowd out of it early. We're going to have a ton of time to talk about this stuff. But these are all things now that I don't think the Patriots will fear at all. And I think that there'll be every opportunity for New England to advance and have a chance to go to the big game.
I think the only problem am I still on with you, John?
Yeah, you're here.
Oh, okay. I think the only thing that I'm concerned with is that bye week. You know, with the amount of injuries that we've sustained this year, and you know, our patchwork offensive line, which is doing a great job, I think. I mean, obviously they, you know, had some ups and downs this Sunday, but you know, the extra time to heal and rest,
yeah,
obviously is a great, great big benefit. Granted, you know, I mean, I just, you know, as far as the AFC is concerned, I hope Patriots Nation's not overly down on the Patriots after this game. I mean, like I said, we've been the number one seed, you know, so many times in the last decade and have that bye week so many times. I think we can get a little complacent, take for granted the fact that we're in the playoffs at all and that we're AFC East champions. We still, you know, like I said, I think that we're still the team to beat in the AFC. And I just, you know, we laid an egg. We almost came back and gave it back. But, you know, I mean, it was a rough game to watch. I'm kind of still muddled in my thoughts because I had such an emotional high and low that night.
Yeah. No, I think you hit the nail on the head pretty well, to be honest with you. I think that they laid an egg, and I think that's putting it pretty well.
Yeah, I think blue after that game. So.
All right, good stuff, Jefferson.
Hey, thanks, John.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Thought we lost his signal there for a second. All right, here's Kat in Chicago. Hey, Kat, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad you called because I heard you on with the fantasy guys, and I'm like, what's that? She's being unfaithful.
I need some help. I did win my game, though.
Oh, okay. Well, then as long as
I'm in the championship.
Congratulations.
They're telling me to pick up the Lions D. Man, was that a bad idea.
Okay, well, I was going to say, glad that we could help you, but then I'll hold on to that one. Okay. At least you won your game. That's what counts.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for you.
So, John, I had to call in. Sorry to kind of switch directions here again, but...
No worries.
I had to call in response to Don in Georgia because he said a couple things that just weren't accurate.
Okay.
And I don't... To me, that's what I hate. He said that the rifle that was used in those shootings was not an assault rifle, and it was an assault rifle.
I thought so, too, but yeah, I wasn't going to, yeah.
Right. It's the civilian equivalent of an M16.
Right.
It's an assault rifle, and they are banned. I grew up in Connecticut. I went to college 10 minutes from where this happened, and I have a lot of friends who live in Newtown.
Wow.
And I can tell you from living there that these type of guns are banned. And the only reason that she had this was because it was grandfathered in. And if he thinks that, and it was legal. It was legal. But if he thinks that anybody who owns a gun legally, those are the only people who, you know, they're responsible and stuff like this never happens to them. Her guns were owned legally. And if you think it wasn't her responsibility to make sure that her son or anybody else besides her who legally owned those guns could get a hold of them, then he is crazy, because if you're going to own a gun, that is absolutely your responsibility.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Sure. So, should be. You should be held responsible if something happens to that, you know, to someone with your gun, a gun that's licensed to you.
Right.
I totally agree. I think if you put some bite into these laws, then I think we have fewer incidents like what we saw happen on Friday.
Right. Exactly. If things weren't grandfathered in, you know, and I've had this discussion with my husband because he feels that, you know, if somebody wants to do something crazy, they're going to do something crazy.
Well, your husband is right. That is true.
Right.
But you're going to make it more difficult for someone to do something crazy. And maybe if you make it more difficult for someone to do something crazy, maybe the system catches them before they have a chance to do that craziness.
I agree. And I think that you, if nothing else, you can kind of mitigate some of the destruction. You know, if he hadn't had an assault rifle, maybe there would have been, you know, 10 kids or 5 kids.
But you're right. There wouldn't had as much happen. And look, life is so precious, and especially, you know, I don't even know how to go on anymore about it, Kat. I'll be honest with you. I'm absolutely sick to my heart, to my very core, over what happened. The only other time I felt this way, as I said in the first hour of the program, the only other time I really felt this way about a significant occurrence, historical occurrence, was after 9/11.
Yeah.
And
I agree with you.
I just because of the innocence involved here, it just made it very, very difficult to completely and totally comprehend.
Right. I agree. So I'm sorry for bringing it down again. I just couldn't. I feel the exact same way you do, and
sure.
I couldn't let.
Yeah.
I just, you know what I mean? I have to say something. Because the worst thing that could happen is that people start getting misinformation,
right,
and they start thinking other things, and it, you know.
Yeah.
So
I totally
thank
agree.
Thank you.
Sure, no problem at all. No problem at all.
All right. Well, I will talk to you soon.
You got it. Thanks, Kat. I appreciate you taking the time to do that. Let's go to Brian in Brighton, Massachusetts. Brian, you're in the playbook.
Hey, Rook, it's tough to follow Kat on that topic.
Yeah, I know. I realize that, but go ahead.
I'm going to try to steer us back onto Patriots stuff because, I mean, no disrespect, but I don't.
Understood.
I'm not educated in the whole firearms argument at all.
No problem. You go right ahead.
So what I want to say is I vehemently disagree with you.
Okay.
I am very afraid of Denver, but I don't. Not so much playing in Denver. I'm just afraid of Manning, and I think that you saw that. I think Belichick is afraid of Manning. I mean, we may have won earlier this year, but if you remember, Manning was catching up from a pretty big lead, and to the point that you could tell, like, Belichick was getting a little nervous about putting the ball back in Manning's hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, the POW guys were making fun of Fred because Fred said people were on the ledge.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was positive. I'm kind of on the ledge. And here's why. I think that this game, the Patriots just got manhandled. And I don't think that was out of sorts for San Francisco. That defense has been doing it all year. So once again, you see that it's not that ridiculous to think the Patriots can get blown out. If you can play a standard defense, get pressure on Brady, and then just a mediocre quarterback can, you know, pick apart our secondary like
mm-hmm.
it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like that's where we're at, and that's just reality. Houston was an anomaly. That was a team that just wasn't professional. They quit on the field. And the blowout doesn't mean that I think we're that much better of a team. I thought it was just a case of the team quitting on the field.
Well, conversely, Brian, I would say that I don't think the Patriots are that bad of the team, no matter what you saw against San Francisco.
I didn't say bad, but I said that it's definitely shows that standard attack of just getting pressure up on Brady and our defensive secondary. If you're smart and you push them, you'll get it.
Yes, but here's the catch: if you don't make the mistakes that you made on Sunday night, you still win that game.
I think who knows? You know, I mean,
Of course, who knows? But all I'm saying is that if you don't shoot yourself in the foot and give San Francisco some short field to work with, you're in the game. In fact, you probably win the game. So, by the way, speaking of Denver, and I'm being reminded here by several people all at once. Speaking of Denver, that was a 31-7 game. Patriots had a 31-7 lead on Denver.
And what was the final score?
31-21. Remember, they were going through the stage where they weren't able to close people out earlier in the year.
I think did Belichick go for like a weird fourth down play? He did something weird, trying to not give the ball back to Manning. I remember, I vaguely remember something like that, but it was a while ago.
I'm sure we'll have a chance to revisit it all.
Yeah. So anyway, but, and I, one other thing, I mean, so A, but as a Patriots fan, I was proud of, you know, I liked watching our team go get down and, you know, not give up. I mean, they easily could have quit the game like Houston did. But the other thing is, how, I mean, I feel like Harbaugh is like a mastermind.
A mastermind?
Yeah, an amazing coach. I mean, San Francisco was just a laughingstock.
Well, I don't know that, you know, a mastermind, I think he's a smart coach, all right? He's a very smart coach. He showed that he's a very good coach. He showed that he's the right coach, you know, for the 49ers to have because they felt like they needed something else to kind of get them over the hump with the talent that they had last year. Remember, they were very close last year to getting in the big game. Oh, by the way,
and they came from the bottom.
Yes,
the year before.
They have worked themselves up to the point where now that they are a legitimate contender. And by the way, that Denver on the Denver thing that you were talking about, Brian, yeah, there was a 4th and 5 play on the Denver 37-yard line with about 10, 11 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and they led 31-14. You're not going to punt from the Denver 37-yard line anyway. That's no man's land.
Well,
too far from a field goal and too short to punt it, so why not go for it?
No, I think I do remember, and I think I agreed with Paul Perillo when he was saying I would have gone to pin them inside the 20.
You probably, in retrospect, you probably should have taken a 5-yard penalty and backed it up, and you should have let Mesko try to coffin corner it. I would agree with that. And my guess would be if you had a chance to do it over, that's the move that they would make.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem, Brian. Thank you. Appreciate that. And I think, what was it? 11-yard? What was it, Kev? An 11-yard sack on the next play? On that next play?
So on 4th and 5, Brady got sacked for an 11-yard loss and Denver got the ball at the 48.
And Denver got the ball at the 48.
So it
gave him a short
really
field.
Was.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, he got sacked on a 4th and 5 play. If you do what you're supposed to do, you know, the worst that's going to come out of it is what? They get the ball at the 20-yard line, which is still 28 yards difference in field position. So it could have been a 31-14 game for all we know, rather than 31-21. I'm just saying that, you know, as I sort of look at it, I don't fear going to Denver. I think they'll be able to move the football on.
Yeah, I mean, they blew out that exact same team with Tebow last year in Denver and clinched the AFC's title that day.
I realize
obviously
there are a lot of players,
a
lot of players on that team have risen their level up to meet Peyton Manning. Yes. But Manning does get a lot of credit, which is why, by the way, I think Manning.
Without a doubt, he deserves it.
Manning is going to get MVP.
For what he's done, he deserves it. It's been remarkable.
Manning's going to get MVP. You know that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like
the
guy.
And I will tell you this, that if somehow Minnesota beats Houston this weekend.
Oh, yeah. AP's
all day.
There,
all
yeah.
day is going to. AD is going to make a big
AD,
run at it.
You're right.
All day. Everybody keeps calling him AP because he's Adrian Peterson.
You're right.
His nickname is AD for all day.
Correct. Thank you for pointing that out.
Okay. No problem.
At least I can admit when I'm wrong. It was a slip.
And at least you can admit when I'm wrong, too.
It sounded like one of those idiots on SportsCenter who don't know his nickname.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah. I apologize 1,000 times. All right. Let me get some emails in here. And then in the last half of the hour here, we're going to let you hear from the conference calls with Coach Belichick and Matt Patricia. We have not done Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator. We've done.
I apologize 1,000
yeah,
times.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll get on my hands and knees. I misspoke.
That's Ted Sarandis. My good friend Ted Sarandis when he was at WEEI here in Boston. We've had Josh McDaniels in the playbook and his conference calls this year, but we have not had a chance to listen to Matt Patricia. And so as the Patriots defensive coordinator, we thought we'd do that today as well, considering, the defense, it wasn't exactly the way that, I mean, you gave up 41 points. You gave them a lot of opportunity to get the 41, but you still gave up 41. All right, Jim in Florida says, lots of nitpicks, but I'm going to choose one. And my nitpick is the obvious ones relating to the loss, but I hope one gets resolved between now and the start of the playoffs. Pats blew their best chance of locking up a 1 or a 2. Fumbled, stumbled, bumble their way. So unless there's a Christmas miracle, the Pats will go into the playoffs as the 3. They won't get a bye. Yada, yada, yada. We know all that. So that said, I hope Belichick rests some of the walking wounded on the team to get them rested and healthy. Might even be better off as the 4th seed playing Indy in Foxborough rather than Cincy or Pittsburgh. You know what? I'm not even going to entertain these questions. I think we can entertain them, but I don't think there's anything to it. There's no way you're ever going to get these guys down the hallway to tank a game. It's just not going to happen. even if they realize that strategically they might be better off as the 4 seed as opposed to the 3 seed. Look, we got 2 weeks of football left to play, okay? So we can spend the entire playoff week, or actually we can even spend next week a little bit talking about this if you want to. I just think it's too early to talk about it. Stephen Killeen. Great gosh almighty, where to begin? First half of the Pats and 49ers could be called abysmal. That might be sugarcoating it. Drop passes, unable to carry the ball as if it had a handle on it. Arm tackling. That's another good nitpick. Arm tackling, Steve. Good call.
Or just lack of tackling.
Or lack of tackling altogether. Yeah. Yeah, it was bad.
I got to admit, that play happened right in front of me, and I had a Fred Kirsch thought that popped up. I was like, I wonder if I should just step out and tackle him.
They would have given the guy the touchdown.
Would have got a game ball.
But you would have gotten your 15 minutes of fame and a pink slip.
Yeah, I wouldn't be here.
No, you would not be here today if that had happened.
No, Andy Hart would be rejoicing right now.
Wow.
But there'd be nobody to set up the K-Cup machine.
It's true. We got a brand new K. Who sent the K-Cup machine?
Nelson in New Hampshire. He hand-delivered it on Sunday to the Dunkin' Donuts Patriots pregame social.
Nelson in New Hampshire.
Nelson is a franchisee, owns a couple Dunkin' Donuts stores up there, and we thank him very much.
You are unbelievable. Thank you, sir. And we're going to keep this for our own use here inside the radio studios, right? Wow. Thank you, Nelson. Chris in Seattle. Before nitpicking, I do have to say thank you for the tribute before the game Sunday. I don't know how you kept it together in that situation. It was very hard, Chris. And the flares were beautiful, a perfect gesture when words are not enough. My heart is broken over Sandy Hook Elementary. As for the football nitpicks, I have to zoom in on ball control. I'd say the lion's share of the loss has to be set at the hands of those who coughed up the ball. I actually think overall the defense did a respectable job holding them to 31 into the third quarter, given the cards they were dealt. Well, maybe not. Secondary's still getting burned. Good point. My second nitpick is for that stupid kickoff return at the end. Man, was that bad, not just because it was a critical moment, but it looked like we just expected him to run out of bounds. Confusion and lack of effort is shocking after all that had been accomplished in the previous ten or so minutes. Fine, we're not getting a bye. I still think we have an excellent shot at this thing. I actually like the Pats' chances against any of the teams who figured to be in the playoffs. That's correct, Chris. Eric in Atlanta. Why can't Gostkowski kick it out of the end zone at the end of the game? Maybe it's because it was 35 degrees and sleeting. The ball had to be hard and wet. Don't think they were able to keep the balls dry all game. You know what? That certainly could have been a factor.
See, this is where I disagree.
I've allowed for that, but I just, you know what?
As a guy that sees a lot of the operations in terms of how they handle the footballs.
Yeah.
So the balls are in this pouch on the sideline, you know, with the ball boys and the X-Men and all those guys. And then they come in, and they're, you know, they never hit the ground. They come in on every single play, a new drive football. And the umpire stands over the line of scrimmage, stands over the spot, and has the ball in this, like, little pouch that he has, almost like a kangaroo, keeping it dry.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the offense breaks the huddle, he puts it in play.
Interesting.
So it's only really out in the elements for, like, I don't know, 10 or 15 seconds until the center gets over the ball and snaps. It's really – they do a really good job, and I think that's why we saw Kaepernick and Brady be so effective throwing the ball all over the place.
Because the ball was basically normal.
It was dry. I mean, in those things, you know, they're kept pretty warm, but they're definitely kept dry. And that's why you're seeing – I mean, I don't think you could make that the wet ball argument, especially on offense.
That's a good point by you, Kev. Sean in Maryland, turnovers are part of the game, and for once they didn't fall into the Patriots' hands. The special teams defense needs to be able to perform when the offense is hiccuping and turning it over. Not worried about this game for the long term. I don't think they'll lose the ball as much as they did and get as unlucky as they did on all of the 49ers' fumbles. Tough game. Don't hang our heads on this one. The only thing that scares me is Denver, but they're playing some of the best ball in all of the NFL. Can't wait till the playoffs. Maurice in Alabama. I want to talk about the kickoff return. So it's like they're not even trying. They're just running, waiting to get tackled, and not looking to make a play. We need someone back there that is fearless and confident. If you can't make one person miss, then you shouldn't be back there. I believe I also brought that up too, Maurice. Thank you for the backup there. Our kick return game has gone to hell in a handbasket. Todd in Jacksonville. My nitpick of the game. How do you call a pass play to Woodhead, which turned out to be the last offensive play of the game for the Pats, when he runs almost 10 yards? You need 3 for the first down. Niners defender was giving Woodhead a 5-yard cushion. Brady is usually very good at noticing things like this and adjusting the play to take advantage of it. Did he just not see it? Correct. He did not see it. And I would also tell you the 49ers did an excellent job of defending on that play, which is why he had to go to Woodhead in the first place. The next time that Danny Woodhead is a primary option, will probably be the last time. He's never a primary option. Jonathan in Florida. Between both teams, there were a total of 14 kickoffs, and of those, only 8 made it into the end zone. Of the 8 kicks that reached the end zone, only 3 were touchbacks. As much as the obvious desired play would have been to knock the ball through the back of the end zone under normal circumstances, the weather probably prohibited both kickers from effectively blasting the ball. I have to give Gostkowski a pass on that one. Well, I'm taking the pass back, because as Kevin just explained, those balls are kept warm and out of the elements. So there should be no excuse for not blasting it through the back of the end zone.
It's one thing to blame the football. The football had nothing to do with it. But if you're saying, okay, there was wind, I mean, that's obviously a situation that bears. But there wasn't really that much wind.
No.
There was a light
mist.
We
were both out in the elements. There was a light mist.
And it wasn't even, it poured before the game. It poured.
Yeah.
And during the game, to be honest, we got luckier than I thought we were going to get, because it never was really that tropical deluge, downpour. It was just a steady, light mist.
Mm-hmm. Brooklyn Matt. John, the Niners' kickoff return reminded people of the Desmond Howard one in Super Bowl 31. Pats had gotten back to within one score in the fourth quarter on a Curtis Martin touchdown and had momentum until that back-breaking return. Just thought we old-timers needed to school all the recent bandwagoners on some Patriots history. Good point, Brooklyn Matt. And he says, as you know, I'm a displaced New Englander, originally from Connecticut. As it happens, I was only 15 miles away from Newtown on Friday morning. I was at my parents' house in Fairfield. The news helicopters flew overhead after dinner, returning back to New York City after giving their overhead camera angles for the evening newscast, and it was an eerie sight indeed. Thank you, Brooklyn Matt. All right, quickly, a couple of more here. This one comes from Matt, who says, I'm new to Patriots Radio this year and have enjoyed the football talk. I was a bit disappointed when you veered into the political talk, but do understand, since you are not far from Connecticut, I disagree with your view that gun control will be the answer and have a different point of view for you to consider. As a husband of a teacher, I wish my wife had the ability to defend herself and her students if a situation ever occurred like what happened in Connecticut. Without her guns, she'll be one of those that would be needlessly slaughtered because she has no way to defend herself. I'm going to stop right here, because if she had a gun and it was safely, even if it was safely locked away from the children, how soon do you think she'd have been able to go get it before she was slaughtered anyway? You got to think about that. If there are less guns available for people to do damage with, there's going to be less damage. And I realize that's a simplistic point of view, Matt. Very simplistic. But after what happened, and as it keeps happening, you have to do something. You cannot stand pat. You can't. If you stand pat, it's like admitting that, it'll go away. And that's just pure stupidity. Even the most advocate, even the most staunch advocates of freedom to carry and bear arms, okay, even the NRA has kept its mouth shut since Friday. And, well, they should. And I'm very much pro-guns. I have been, always have been in my entire life. But this event moved me to consider other options, and I wish I had thought differently beforehand. He says, I hate for my first email about Patriots Radio to be political commentary, so here's some comments on Monday's game. I'm not worried about the Pats. They're not as bad as they played Sunday, much like Houston last Monday. Can someone explain why there was a low blocking penalty called during an interception return on one of our offensive linemen and not on the 49ers fullback when he dove at Dennard's knee and knocked him out of the game? My guess, Matt, is because the referees missed it and that officiating crew missed a lot. They missed a lot. I think everybody loves to make fun of Ed Hockley now. A lot of people consider him to be one of the top officials. He had a miserable night.
There was no foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
Yeah. Sorry, Ed, but that was not one of your finer moments. So I guess we'll have to chalk it up just a bad night by the officials overall. Patriots didn't lose because of the officials, but it was a very inconsistent night at best. All right, let's get to what we promised here. We have Bill Belichick, and we also have Patriots defensive coordinator Matt Patricia. These are conference calls with Patriots media and visiting media as well from earlier in the day, and we're going to get to those right after this timeout inside the Patriots playbook.
Ah. That is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of a smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price of participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the Red Zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Games. Very competitive football team. And in spite of their record, I don't think that really means anything. Just watch them on film there. Pretty competitive. Everybody certainly gave Miami. And that game was a lot closer than the score indicates as well. So we're underway on these guys.
Bill, after two highly hyped games against teams leading their division and the Texans and the 49ers, obviously facing a team in last place, and as you just mentioned, they're more competitive than the record indicates, but how do you approach this with the players to hopefully have them avoid what could be a mental letdown based on, you know, this team obviously not at the top of their division at 2-12?
Yeah, well, we don't talk a lot about records. We just don't do it. We talk about Houston's record or San Francisco's record or Jacksonville's record. It doesn't really mean anything. What we do is we look at our opponent and try to analyze their strengths and things that we have to do to be competitive against them and the areas of weakness that we feel like we can attack. You know, whatever their record is, doesn't really matter. Those are against other teams. We didn't have anything to do with those games. It's how we match up against them. So all our preparation and focus will be on what Jacksonville does well, what we need to stop, and where we think we might be able to gain some advantages or have opportunities, and how we can hopefully exploit those. But that's really the way we approach every game. And what the team record is, it's really very important.
For you, as you sort of plan to address the team when they come back in, how much do you consider just in general human nature? The idea that, you know, some weeks there are probably going to be some games that for players they're maybe easier to get up for based on the level of competition, and then others that might be a little bit tougher.
Like I said, Mike, we'll address it pretty much the way we usually do. Break down Jacksonville for what they are, the team that they are, and probably what they present, which are numerous, just like we have everybody else. think the players won't have any trouble seeing that. I mean, they'll watch shorts, they'll watch Blackman, watch, you know, the backs. They'll watch the pass rush, David, Knight, and see those guys. They know Aaron Ross, Cox, Harris, Lowry, you know, all those guys that we've played against before, and they've all given us trouble individually. Some are with a different team, but some of them were when they were with Jacksonville. Juan Landry, physical safety in there. Plus, if there's several guys on defense that we've played against before in other organizations that we know are good football players, plus guys like Mathis that have been there a while. But, and mm-hmm. you know, they're outstanding players in their own right. No, it could be a problem.
Yeah, the 53rd spot, you didn't fill it last week. Any thoughts on this week, how that will proceed?
That's something that I'll talk to Nick about today. We've had a couple of preliminary thoughts on it, but nothing definitive. So we're both doing a little research and a little thinking and try to see where some of our players are relative to their availability this week. So we'll have that conversation probably later on this afternoon. And maybe the coaching staff on it, figure out where we are. But as you know, we have to inactivate seven players anyway, so find a player at that position, then have to inactivate him.
Sure.
The gain on that's marginal. We would anticipate Jermaine returning to the team after this game, so we're going to need a spot for that. If he comes back and is activated and all that, I mean, I know it hasn't happened yet, but that's on the horizon, then we would need a spot for that. So one thing we've talked about is just leaving that spot open in anticipation of that happening. Try to fill it, have to reopen it, that type of thing. So we'll look at our options, try to do what makes best for everybody involved here.
Coach, Maurice Jones Drew hasn't played in quite some time, but there's a possibility of his return. What does he bring to the table, and are you preparing as if he would be playing?
Sure, Karen. Well, we're we definitely have to be prepared for him to play. I think we all know what type of back he is. So it'd probably be good if he waited one more week. I'm sure he could use a few days of rest before he comes back, but great speed, balance, strength. He's got a low center of gravity, kind of built like Ray Rice, with great lower body strength, hard to knock off his feet, real good balance, good vision, can accelerate through the hole, excellent hands, good coming out of the backfield. Jennings is a very explosive player himself. He can really accelerate through the hole. He's got good quickness and elusiveness in the secondary. Owens has done a good job for him. So they've got a lot of good backs, fullbacks. They've got more backs on their roster than any team in the league. They have like seven or eight of those guys. But they all are affected. But I think Jones-Drew is certainly at the top of the. One of the top backs in the league, has been for a long time, and he always gives us trouble. Even when you have him, you don't have him. You are got to tackle and get on the ground, even if you play the play properly and have it looks like you're in position to defend it. It's still tackling, it's a problem. He gains a lot of yards after contact.
I was going to ask about the 53rd guy, Bill, but just on the fly here. This is the first time in a while that you guys have had 7 days or 6 days to prepare. Is there, I don't know if comfort's the right word, but is it nice to be back on the full week schedule? Does that help your preparation, in your opinion?
I think it's definitely good to be back on a regular schedule. I think that all of us, players, coaches, just really everybody in the organization. You kind of get used to a routine, and you play on Sunday, and then you have that routine, and you play again on Sunday, so you kind of know where you're at on Wednesday, where you should be in terms of your preparation, where you are on Thursday, whether you're ahead or you're behind in that preparation, where you are on Friday in terms of getting things done and leading up to the game. And when you change that game time or game date, if it's an 8-day week or a 4-day week or a 6-day week or whatever it is, you're kind of trying to find your equilibrium there of where you are. So like last week, on Wednesday, we weren't at the same point that we usually would be on a Wednesday because I haven't played Monday night, those type of things. So I think it's good to be in a routine, and it's good to be playing from Sunday to Sunday. And so I think just for today on Tuesday as a coaching staff, we know where we normally are on Tuesday. And I think that, in terms of our preparation, our targets of where we need to be, what we have to have done, we can be there, and then moving along to Wednesday and Thursday. And if we have an opportunity to gain a little ground and get ahead, then you can take advantage of that and really, know exactly what it is that you're ahead on and how you can maybe better prepare for a situation for this particular game relative to some other game because of the problems that Jacksonville presents. So it is good to be on that.
Bill, I wanted to talk about Sebastian Vollmer and what you saw in him back when you drafted him that made you think that he could be who he's been. I don't think he went to the combine. And maybe I'll talk about his evolution since.
Well, Sebastian was, an interesting player. He, of course, came from Germany, and initially, there were one of the many questions about Sebastian. I mean, he didn't have a lot of playing experience. Played football in Germany and all that relative to, American high school football. He didn't have a great background. He was a developing player at Houston and certainly made a lot of progress through his career there, but an injury to deal with that set him back a little bit, and he was just, I would say, in general, behind. The language barrier was something that we had to investigate. He played left tackle at Houston, and I would say based on his college film, if you just looked at the film, you wouldn't. Say you would draft this player in the second round. He just didn't have that kind of performance in college. And then he went to the East-West game, I think it was, and played right tackle at the East-West game. And I would say that game probably wasn't of a second round performance level either for a draft eligible player. And I think some of that's reflected in the fact that, as you said, he wasn't invited to the combine. So, which most second-round players would be. It's pretty unusual for a player taken at that point to not be invited to the combine. So some of the concerns were the left tackle, the right tackle, really what is he? Because he's really kind of, I think if you just look at the player, you would say he's probably more of a right tackle looking player than a left tackle, but that's what he played in college. So, what position is he? How can he adapt to a higher level and different techniques and learning and all that from a player that didn't have a great college background or even high school background in the game? There was certainly an injury concern based on his college career. And, we wanted to make sure with the language thing that we could communicate with the player. Well, as we worked him out and got to know him, all those things clear themselves up. Language certainly is no problem. Sebastian's very, very smart. Speaks several languages fluently. The rookie show, he did a part of his skit was in German, so nobody understood it, but was you know, he's very, very quick witted and you know, thinks quickly and adapts quickly and can really process information probably about as well as anybody can. And in going through the workouts with him and getting to see him athletically, he has the kind of size, which is rare, size, strength, quickness, athleticism for that, for his size. That's pretty special. And he's played both left and right tackle for us. So I'd say his rate of improvement once he got to the National Football League was extremely fast. Like any of us really thought that he would contribute much as a rookie. Kind of saw him more as a developmental player that, you know, might take a while. But of course, he played quite a bit his rookie year. Played against a lot of good players, you know, like Indianapolis and teams like that that had very good pass rushers, and he performed well. So he learned quickly. He adjusted his techniques quickly to this level, and he's a very intelligent player that can make adjustments and handle things on the fly and all that. So different, but you know, some similarities to Steve Neal, that type of a developmental player that developed very quickly and contributed very quickly. So
thank you.
Long answer to a short question there.
Always welcome. Thank you.
Sure.
Matt, what kind of a difference does Maurice Jones-Drew make for the Jaguars?
Maurice Jones-Drew, obviously, he's a phenomenal back for them. He's really been a workhorse for that offense and a player that is very explosive and dynamic. Talking about a guy that's extremely hard to tackle, extremely hard to make sure he's down. You know, there's a lot of times where it looks like you've got him wrapped up, you've got him contained, or he's down on the ground and he's really not, and he's still driving his legs and he's still you know, breaking tackles and you know, squeaks through and turns a nothing play into a big play. So I think it's really important for us to have a high awareness, you know, with a player like that when he's in the game. Just to obviously tackling is critical, and also in the you know, in the essence that sometimes behind those offensive linemen, you know, he gets a little bit lost in there, and you got to try to find him when he's hitting those holes at 100 miles an hour, trying to get through really fast. So, he obviously is a great player for him, but I mean, really, you know, in all respects, they've done a great job with the backs that they've, you know, been able to put in there. Certainly with Jennings and Owens, you know, just in keeping it rolling as far as, you know, running the football and doing a good job of keeping the offense moving with the rushing game. So, yeah, he definitely has a great dynamic for that offense.
Hey, Matt, we saw some of Pat Chung sort of later in the game on Sunday night. Bill mentioned, you know, it wasn't performance-related or anything with Steve, and felt like there was anything injury-related that we heard of. Just wondering what sort of different skills Steve and Pat bring. I know they're not necessarily one and the same player, but what dimensions do you have with one in the game versus the other?
Well, I think, you know, all of our players certainly that are active for the game are ready to go at any time, and we will try to, you know, get them all in there at all different times of the game to try to, you know, whether it's a particular package or to, you know, keep them fresh and active. You know, certainly both are productive players for us, and both do a great job in the back end. So not really, you know, anything different for us to rotate people in and get them a chance, an opportunity to go play in the game and hopefully, you know, try to help us win.
To build off that thought, in terms of Patrick Chung, what do you think some of, like, how would you look at some of the strengths of his skill set? Like, what are some of the things that he does well as a player?
Well, I think, you know, Patrick has done a great job for us in many different areas, you know, whether it's, you know, his coverage ability or his, you know, ability to tackle or to adapt to different situations. You know, he certainly has some good experience, played a lot of football for us, and has that side to bring to the game also. So it's really, you know, it's a different array of things that he can do that help us in different situations and, you know, allow us to be a little bit more multiple in different packages.
Matt, this Cecil Shorts is an interesting interesting guy. I guess, you know, I'll speak for myself. I mean, I hadn't heard much about him just because the Jaguars weren't exactly on my radar, but you look at what he's done recently, the production looks pretty good. What do you see from him in terms of the challenge that he presents this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very explosive player. This is a guy that is a big catch-and-run guy. Obviously, you know, is growing within the system and becoming more dynamic for them. I mean, you just take a look at the Houston game, and you can take a look at the big play that he had there, which was a simple short route where he caught the ball, made a couple missed tackles, and then you could just see the explosiveness of him to get to, you know, to the end zone. So this is definitely a guy that'll be, you know, someone we got to take a good look at and make sure we know where he's at all times. They do a good job of trying to get him in different spots, whether it's a matchup or a particular pattern they're looking for. But, you know, he's definitely a guy that can create a big play and someone that obviously is gaining trust with the quarterback and building that relationship there. You know, a guy that will go up and get the ball and catch it and be able to turn, you know, plays that maybe a shorter route on paper, but, you know, the application on the field turns into a bigger play than really what they thought.
Sure, absolutely. You know, looking at the offensive coordinators, Bob Gretkowski, is this sort of the Bengals background here that we're looking at in terms of offensive system? And if not specific to the Bengals, like how would you sort of define, you know, their offensive approach?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a combination, obviously, too, with the head coach, you know, Mike Mularkey, who has some, you know, familiarity with us as far as the different offenses he's been involved in. Pittsburgh, you know, for instance, obviously being at Buffalo, you know, playing us there and with the Dolphins. So, I mean, this is a guy that has, you know, some pretty good knowledge of what we do. So a combination of those two together really, you know, do an excellent job of number one, keeping the offense very balanced from a standpoint of running the ball and throwing the ball. They do a good job of understanding when they need to get the ball downfield to really, you know, push the vertical game and then also the controlled passing game, short game underneath and inside. So they do an excellent job with that. And then along with, obviously, the running game and using, you know, the fullback positions and the tight end position to, you know, create some good blocking angles. You know, they throw the extra offensive lineman in there, which is something that Cincinnati has done, you know, in the past. So that's a carryover from there. So there's really some elements of really kind of all those different offenses that we've seen over the year, the Pittsburgh system, you know, just Mularkey in general, what he does, the Cincinnati system. So, you know, it's a good mix. But, again, I think the biggest thing that they do a great job of is keeping it very balanced. So you're in a situation where you're not, you know, there's no real tips or tendencies as far as, you know, run or pass type situations. You know, they can hand the ball off and they can throw it. They can throw it short. They can throw it deep. They can get it to their go-to players when they have to. They, you know, do a good job of getting it to their tight ends, who obviously, you know, Lewis is a real good player for him, a very big target that the quarterback can get the ball up into. I mean, you know, guy's over 6'6", so 270 pounds. So that's a pretty big target moving through the middle of the field, and he's got good vertical speed. So they definitely, you know, they have they create some problems, you know, in their skill set, along with, you know, keeping it balanced with the run game so that you can't just hone in on one particular facet, whether it's the, you know, the run or the pass. So I think they've done a good job of kind of mixing all the systems that they've been a part in and, you know, coming up with kind of what they're doing offensively, along with, you know, Henny stepping in and doing a good job of controlling the offense and running it from the quarterback standpoint with a little bit of experience and knowledge. He does a good job of getting in and out of some particular plays that he might see based on defensive looks or fronts, and trying to get the ball to the right guys that are open.
Tuesday through Thursday. Hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.